It's time for The Ship Report, the show about all things maritime. I'm Joanne Rideout. It's Tuesday, May 28th, 2019. We have 14 vessels on today's Columbia River ship schedule. In our marine weather forecast, northwest winds, 5 to 10 knots, wind waves from the northwest 2 feet high at about 4 seconds apart, and we have west swells 4 feet at about 9 seconds apart. Well, today on The Ship Report, I'm going to shorten the ship schedule a little bit because I have a pretty amazing story to share with you, and I want to have time to do that. I can tell you that we have 2 inbounders, we have 7 in our Astoria anchorages, and we have 5 outbounders, a total of 12 bulk carriers and 2 car carriers on the river today. Cargos are wheat, soda ash, potash, and steel, and on the car carriers, a combination of Hondas, Fords, and Hyundais. But now, I've got a story to share. Well, today I'd like to talk with you about an absolutely harrowing story of a rescue that happened last year, right around this time, of a couple on a 45-foot sailboat off the coast here who were rescued by our local Coast Guard at Air Station Astoria. And their story really shows how extraordinarily demanding and challenging the waters right off where we live here can be for people who are working and recreating on the water. And I got this story, by the way, from the Astoria Yacht Club's Facebook page. It's the story of the Kellerin, the sailing vessel Kellerin. She's a 45-foot-long sloop owned by Jim and Joy Carey. Sailed 70,000 miles together on a 17-year circumnavigation of the world, so very experienced people. They had 150 miles to go on their journey to come home to, they were aiming for the Strait of Juan de Fuca to go home to the Seattle area. They had looked ahead to the weather. Everything looked good. They had thought they had a great weather window. They had done fine. They got about 150 miles away from their destination on June 16th of last year, and the weather just turned on them. And so I'm going to read some excerpts from the blog post that Joy Carey wrote after they were rescued by the Coast Guard and taken off their boat in incredibly difficult circumstances and taken to Air Station Astoria last year around this time. So I'm just going to read. It's just absolutely compelling. On June 16th, the winds slowly increased throughout the day. As we entered the night hours, we had winds well into the mid-30s, and the seas were building. Still, Kellerin was sailing fine. However, we were losing our direct line to Cape Flattery and were making towards the Columbia River, so the weather was pushing them south, and they couldn't do anything about it. The seas continued to build to over 4 meters and then 5 meters, and now we were heading directly south with the waves on our stern, paralleling the coast and sailing away from our destination. Eventually, we were sailing bare poles. Now, this means that the winds were so high, they had to take the sails down, and they were essentially being pushed by the winds in the direction of the winds and just trying to keep control of the boats so they wouldn't go sideways to the waves and do something called broaching, which could roll them right over. So she says, these were the largest waves I had ever seen while cruising. I estimated they were 30 feet. We decided to keep one-hour watches. I went to bed around 2:30 for a quick nap and to warm up under the covers. I woke around 3:30 to first a hard hit by a wave, so hard it literally felt as though we had been hit by a train while sitting on the tracks. I was suddenly on the ceiling of the boat, and tons of water came in through the companionway hatch. That's the door to the cabin that goes out into the cockpit. The noise inside the boat was deafening. I managed with some difficulty to swing out of the berth, and when I put my feet on the floor, I was standing in water up to my ankles. The water was sloshing violently back and forth from bow to stern. I could barely comprehend what I saw. The aft cabin companionway ladder was across the cabin and bashed into the louvered door of the hanging locker. One of the 2 scuba tanks was out of their snap holders behind the ladder and sitting in the hanging locker. Jim called me from the cockpit, and I answered him, telling him I couldn't get out of the aft cabin. If I needed to escape, I would have had to go through the deck hatch on over the berth. I was able to move the ladder and the scuba tank from the doorway into the pass-through. Everything that was on the quarter berth was now on the floor. Stuff had been piled there and secured for years for passages, and now it was in a heap on the cabin floor. But the second scuba tank was now in that bunk. We had a bag of laundry sitting in the shop that was behind the engine, and all the clothes were sloshing around the cables and chains of the steering. The heavy sliding doors to the engine room were bashed into the pass-through. I had some difficulty getting those out of the way and navigating myself through the mess and now into the main cabin. The sight was so horrifying and complex, I could barely take it in. Almost every locker door was open or broken, and the lockers were bare, and the contents were sloshing back and forth on the cabin floor. The bilge hatches were gone. They weren't always the easiest to get up with their pull rings, and the water tanks were exposed to view. Locker lids either lay flat on the cabin's sides or were askew, and the shelves were broken. It just couldn't be possible that my beautiful boat, the one we had had for 27 years and so lovingly maintained, could look like this. I got to the main companionway, and saw Jim at the wheel. He had blood covering half of his face. He looked shocked, but was steering us down a huge wave. I had a hard time taking this view in as well. I was looking at clear sky where once there had been a full cockpit enclosure. I asked him, "Where's the Dodger?" The Dodger is a cabin, kind of a sunshade. And Jim said, "It's just gone." He asked me to get on the VHF radio and put out a Mayday call. I felt strange doing this. I even hesitated for a few seconds, as I had never pictured us asking for help. We never had since our first time together out in sailboats back in 1978. We got no answer on the radio. So they weren't sure eventually whether the radios were down, but they couldn't get any answer on the to their Mayday calls to the Coast Guard. So they activate the EPIRB and they wait. And a Coast Guard helicopter arrives above them, and they drop a rescue swimmer into the water, who swims to their boat, climbs aboard, and tells them it's time for them to go. Then everything went at hyperspeed. The Coast Guard rescue swimmer said I had just a minute to go and gather my things. He told us to inflate our suspender life jackets and jump into the water. "What?" I said. Of course, this was the only thing to do, but I hesitated for a second and looked at the giant wave coming at us and said, I'm not jumping into that. And he said, "Go now." Jim said, "Jump." And then I was in the water. Jim later said he had never seen me swimming so fast. I just wanted to get into that basket being lowered before a wave tumbled me under and I might possibly never come back up. Getting into the basket was easy. I just rolled in, and moments later, I was in the helicopter. The basket lowered again for Jim, and he was helped out into the helicopter. The doors were closed, and we started to fly away. I had to restrain myself from shouting that I wanted to go back. The hardest moment of both Jim's and my lives were when we could see Kellerin through the window, when we both realized she was probably lost forever, and that somehow we had failed her when she had been so good to us for so many years. Now, it took them hour to fly back by helicopter from where they were rescued in the ocean. And when they landed, the pilot told the ground control that they had only had a minute of fuel left. So the reason why there was such a rush was that they were almost at the range of their fuel when they picked these folks up, and they got them back safely. So incredible, of course, professionalism by our Coast Guard folks. But another extraordinary thing happened about a month later, 500 miles south or so of where they had been rescued. This is down off Fort Bragg in California. A Coast Guard cutter there found their boat still afloat and towed it back to the Coast Guard station. And so they had the opportunity to recover their boat after all, which I'm sure that they thought was lost. But this story just shows you how we should never, ever take for granted the waters where we live, not on the river, not on the ocean. Even people who were as incredibly prepared and as experienced as these people got into real big trouble about something that they could not help that happened to them out there in the waters right off the Columbia River. You've been listening to The Ship Report, a show about all things maritime. I'm Joanne Rideout. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.